You are listening to the sixth season of the Just Powers podcast. I'm Dr. Sheena Wilson, principal investigator of Just Powers, and I'm joining you from Amiskwichi, Wisconsin, Beaver Hills House, colonially named Edmonton, where the University of Alberta is situated in Western Canada. I'm joined by Patrick Mann, our guest host for all eight episodes of the Reflector series.
Hello to our listeners, and thanks very much, Sheena. I'm joining you from Eastern Canada and the lands where Western University is located in London, Ontario, on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabeg, the Haudenosaunee, the Lenapewak, and the Chenantan Nations, on lands connected with the London Township and the Sombra Treaties of 1796 and the Dish with One Spoon Covenant Wampum. This speculative energy futures project involved five team members. Four of us are speaking in this episode: Janice McCokas, Ruth Beer, Sheena Wilson, and myself, Patrick Mann, and Curtis McAdam, the fifth member, who we'll talk to in the next episode. So in Reflector 2, we focus on two interlinked projects, Convergences and Bundle, that center on Indigenous ways of knowing and traditional prophecies and how they relate to our project's conception of energy transition. Convergences was a large-scale collaborative installation presented at the Fab Gallery in Edmonton. The show was entitled Prototypes for Possible Worlds and took place in 2019. The Bundle project followed from it to extend Indigenous teaching through sound stories and other tools contained in a set of bundles housed in each of our flux kits. These handheld teaching tools are meant to be touched, listened to, and shared. So be sure to check the episode description for links to our interactive resources so you can enjoy a visual and auditory encounter with Convergences and Bundle as you listen to this podcast. Sheena, I'll turn it over to you now and ask you to introduce the Speculative Energy Futures team members who will be joining us today.
Ruth Beer is a Vancouver-based artist interested in cross-disciplinary approaches to cultural practice. Her artwork that includes sculpture, video, and interactive projections has been shown in national and international exhibitions. She's a member of the Royal Canadian Academy, and she's been awarded several public art commissions. Professor Ruth Beer is joining us from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish people, including the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Janice McCokas is a mom, legal warrior, academic, truth teller, and change agent who uses her education, training, and life experience to instill change in the world for future generations. Janice is the Yaani Scholar at Windsor Law School and a member of the Saddle Lake Cree Nation. She is joining us from Amiskwichi.
Thank you, Sheena.
It's great to be talking about this project because, of course, both you and I are on this project, and we picked that title, Convergences, because it represented many different kinds of knowledges coming together across disciplines, across generations, across cultures. And so we felt that Convergences was a really great way to talk about it, all these different epistemologies coming together and cosmologies and ways of understanding the world. And that's what this project is really about. It's about those knowledges that have been excised from Western scientific rationalism and are not being either considered as part of the question making around climate response or as part of the solution. And I see that as an enormous failing. I talk about that quite a bit in my own academic research, which some people may have read or heard me talk about elsewhere. You know, and I think that we can really borrow lessons from other extinctions, other moments of transformation. But this project is about sharing our knowledges with one another, deep knowledges about what we know, what we know in our bodies, what we've experienced, what it means to live through climate change, informed by other older knowledges that we have to recover and reclaim. So we both have to invent new knowledges, and we have to build those on knowledges that we need to recover and reclaim. So for me, this project is really, it's about decolonization and rematriation and cultural revitalization, you know, both knowledge revitalization and language revitalization, because these are all part of climate justice responses. And, you know, we talk a lot about Indigenous knowledges here in Canada because we are on Indigenous lands, and that's very, very important. But Indigenous knowledges are not the only knowledges that have been overwritten by patriarchal colonial capitalism. You know, we've also devalued and feminized the knowledges of women, The knowledge is held by queer and trans folks and BIPOC folks and disabled folks and anybody considered other. And that's why, you know, we're out on the front lines in the majority defending the land, water, earth, and air. And I think this project is trying to capture just, you know, the tip of the iceberg about those knowledges that we know in our bodies and that we know from all the science and also all the things that science has excluded, because we're all living through this and nobody can be objective about climate justice, right? Or climate change or climate responses, because we're all deeply implicated.
So thanks, Sheena. I was thinking about some of what you're raising, and from my standpoint as a practicing artist, the ways that I think about methodologies and ways of sharing knowledge that I think really do factor into this part of speculative energy futures. So the beginnings of this part of the project involved our going to Onion Lake First Nation with Janice McCaucus. I think that we recognized well in advance that as artists, our methods are often intentionally non-hierarchical or experimental, and often favor narrative and storytelling over more traditional Western-centric academic forms that treat knowledge somewhat more scientifically or systematically, which is certainly what you're getting at. So you might say that as artists, our methods lend themselves to conversations and exchanges in ways that might productively undermine certain kinds of assumptions and approaches that we have to think of as colonial. Though I'm certainly aware that we still show up with a lot of baggage, even as artists.
Yeah, that's so true, Patrick. That was certainly a great experience meeting the students from Onion Lake and working with the youth and working with the youth and the elders, right? We were giving them skills to record the elders and to discover the stories of their own communities and tell those stories themselves. So that was a really fun facilitation where we got to, you know, really watch them come into their own. That was really great. And then we gifted that back to the community. So they all had copies at the end. That was great.
I'll add that I felt really honored to be brought into the circle of relationships that you'd become a part of with Janice and others already. And I think of this as a seemingly informal system or network, but also that it was really important to our developing the project itself. So beginning with convergences, which you'll hear about in the podcast. And I know Ruth Beer at one point talks about the experience and how it helped her find a place in the circle of relations as well, even though she came into the project a little after I did. So I think of this as also raising questions about what's sanctioned as knowledge and knowledge transfer and how that can change quite dramatically through a project like this. In fact, I think we'll hear Ruth unpack this a little bit. I don't think we could have worked on Bundle without actually doing convergences first. And so I was thinking about this and thinking, did one of them birth the other? Was one a sketch for a more fully realized piece later on? As an artist, I like to think about these kind of questions that have to do with temporality and also how one kind of lived experience leads to others and other questions.
You know, I was rereading the zine that Janice and I put together at that first, like the text for the zine. Of course, you know, you were involved as well in writing the zine, but the text pieces Janice and I put together. And, you know, that really holds up. They really hold up over time. And the science that we know about climate has changed quite a bit, like the climate science. And I love that phrase that we have in the bundle, when will Western science catch up with Indigenous knowledges? And I think that that's true, too, in the way they're being communicated, right? So I hope that people can see some of the value in the types of knowledges that are being communicated through the bundle and have some fun exploring it.
I'm really happy to be joined by Janice McCaucus and Ruth Beer. We really are colleagues on this project. So as we get together today, we're going to be focusing on the interrelationship of these two projects that emphasize the importance of Indigenous knowledge. And as we're beginning our discussion, I'm thinking back to one of our first gatherings as a group at the Banff Center in the very early days of speculative energy futures. And I think at that point, we were all sort of finding our way. Each of us probably has our own memories of finding our place amongst new friends, colleagues, people that were coming together around this project that Sheena had initiated along with Natalie Lovelace. For me, I remember being fascinated and moved when I heard you, Janice, speaking to us about Indigenous prophecies shared by your elders. And you helped us to think very specifically about how those relate to climate change. And also then inferentially how they could be thought about in relation to energy transition. So I wonder, Janice, if you could take us back to maybe the ways that you would have been introducing us to those ideas back then and some of the thinking that you have around the importance of Indigenous ways of knowing in relation to these, what we think of as urgent global challenges.
Thanks, Patrick, for the questions, for the introduction, and for centering the conversation on the topics that we all came together to work collectively on. I think when I reflect on our time in Banff, one of the things that I felt was missing from a lot of our conversations was centering Indigenous knowledge. And as a project that is looking to, our people have been holding this incredible wealth of knowledge for millennia. And I think when we were talking about issues of climate change, just transition, climate justice, and how we merge and bring together all these ways of thinking, knowing, and being to come forward with ideas to address the climate crisis, I felt like we kind of had these teachings of what to do, how to prepare ourselves, and how to move forward in the world embedded in what we know to be as prophecies and the teachings and stories associated with prophecy. And so that then caused me to reflect on some of the prophecies that I was introduced to from Curtis's dad and his mom, and then having those taught to me. Because when you hear the prophecies, it causes you to stop and reflect and think about how do I change my behavior to address the state that the world is in. And to me, that was one avenue of bringing together a way to wake people up in a very in your face, in the moment, like this is reality, this is going to happen. And these are truths because these have been transferred from generation to generation. And we know that within Indigenous knowledge and ceremonial practices, we have the ability to look into the future. These are ways that our people were able to prepare themselves to think ahead and to have what I'll call this idea of seven generations thinking, to look into the future to say, maybe we need to change our behavior in terms of what we are doing today so that our children in the future have something left for them. So I wanted to bring that conversation, those teachings, those stories to the work so that we could share that because our project was interdisciplinary and there's things that Western science and scientists and philosophers align with what is happening. So I felt like it was an appropriate way to bring everything into an alignment with what we were doing. And that's how the conversation of bringing prophecy into this work came forward from my perspective.
Thanks, Janice. Yeah, I remember it as a very powerful moment and a very vivid kind of experience to hear you talking about, you know, these important stories. And it was really a kind of a first for me, I will say. I think it became really important to you to engage Curtis in the project. And so, you know, you've said a little bit about the teachings that his parents did with you, but I'm wondering if you could kind of maybe open that up a little bit more and talk about, you know, the kinds of things you felt Curtis needed to bring to the table, if you will.
So I would call myself a kindergarten learner in terms of where I'm at with Indigenous knowledge and ceremony. And I would consider Curtis a university professor and his parents, like the great philosophers of our time and people that have and hold that kind of knowledge, not just within their memory, but within their family and within their community. It's an incredible opportunity for us to be able to have access to that. And I felt like I could share some of the pieces that I had learned from Curtis's parents, Francis and Juliet McAdam. And Curtis certainly has the detailed recollection of those memories and teachings for sure. But to hear it directly from Curtis, it just had much more power, I will say, to bring life to this conversation than I could do justice to. So I felt like it would be appropriate for him to join our group so that he can share those teachings directly from how he learned them as a child, growing up. And that's also practicing knowledge acquisition, knowledge transmission, and knowledge mobilization in terms of bringing all of these elements together for all of us to collectively learn on this journey and how we can use the multiple knowledges that we all have and the gifts that we all share to move forward in this conversation in terms of addressing what climate justice looks like in the future.
I think that was a really key decision, a key move on your part that really helped to kind of generate a great deal of kind of life and activity in our group. Ruth, I'm turning to you, and really you and I were brought into the project certainly separately from different vantage points in different university environments. But in some ways, we have a fair amount in common as visual artists, as contemporary artists. And I was thinking about this in relation to the kinds of languages that we're really kind of referring to here. Thinking also about the many kind of voices in the project and the emphasis on collaboration. And hopefully you get where I'm going. As artists, I think we have a certain kind of language, and you and I are the kind of artists that tend to favor collaboration. So I'm wondering what you could, if you want to just sort of jump in and talk a bit about what you were thinking about as you came into the project, and in a sense, what you might have felt you had to offer, and then maybe I can jump in after.
Well, thank you, Patrick, for your question and for inviting me to think about this project in this way that you're suggesting. And I think that, yes, both you and I have deep experience in research creation. And research creation as a convergence, speaking of our first project, of kind of academic, more conventional research and artistic practice, visual art more specifically, but a kind of integration, interlocking, connectivity that feeds, I think, a lot of our work in the last several years. And it's a very interesting landscape to work in because it does really require collaboration, not only interdisciplinarity and merging of disciplines besides practices of thinking and knowing, but collaboration amongst people, which I get very excited about learning from others who have expertise and interest in new ways that are sort of an introduction to me of as I consider myself a lifelong learner, into new possibilities. I'll speak for myself here, you know, my main expertise, and that we could, or that I could provide support, especially for Curtis and Janice and the ways of thinking that they present that I could learn from, and that I would hope to help mobilize through the art practice. It's been so amazingly pleasurable to hear the stories, to hear the perspectives of both Janice and Curtis, and to think about landscape, which has been a subject that I have been working with, landscape broadly defined as being as addressing anti-colonialism, feminist thinking, social political issues that are all based, land-based issues. And this was a subject of my dissertation 20 years ago as well. So whatever it is that I think about, I I do think about the land, the meaning of the land, the possibilities through the land or expanded through ideas of climate and climate crisis, ideas of belonging. You know, I'm a person who is a refugee to this country. And as such, I'm very grateful to be here and to learn from the people who have lived here all their lives and have opened their doors to myself and my family. So this is an undercurrent in all my thinking of gratitude and of desire to become even more part of this place in a good way.
Thanks so much, Ruth. Yeah, so much of that resonated with me, and including when you refer to yourself as a lifelong learner, I felt that in our group, we were learning from each other in so many different ways. And certainly, you know, I think for people like ourselves, one of the things that we often are doing is we're translating. And sometimes it's about translation into, you know, through materials into something that does create a visual experience. And maybe we'll speak to people in ways that they might not have been able to access through other means. Even some people who can read still wouldn't necessarily respond in the same way as they might to the sort of visual mechanisms that we get to work with. And so I think that was a great privilege for us to be able to bring those tools to the project. And yet I didn't feel that we were asked to simply illustrate the ideas or the knowledges that Janice and Curtis, for example, were sharing with us. It was as if through conversation, we were learning and we were also kind of coming into a sense of understanding and often wonder and all kinds of other emotions that I think, you know, artists often do want to work through as well. So we did these two projects that are interrelated. One is called Convergences, and the other is Bundle. So Convergences was included in an exhibition at the Fine Arts Building Gallery at the University of Alberta, and that was December 2019. Interestingly, we had this meeting at Banff, and very soon after had the brief that we were going to do an exhibition. And so I would say that our project really was kind of emblematic of a conversation. We'd been having conversations together at Banff and, of course, online, etc. And then each of us really sort of started to kind of articulate the kinds of things we might contribute. Now, we had actually made a small kind of a bookwork very quickly when we were in Banff. And through that, you know, that some of the stories that Janice had been talking about around even the representation of the robin and what happens when the robin doesn't return, that became a really strong sort of a kind of more than a symbol, but a strong kind of element in some of the work that we were doing. And so out of that, I was part of producing quite a large, it's really like a curtain, or it could even be thought of as a kind of a rolled out kind of bundle made of canvas, which is like what's used for a teepee. And on that curtain are a number of texts in both Cree and English that refers to some of our questions. And then there's also pockets on the curtain that hold basically sound players, where we had some sound stories that Curtis and others had shared with us. And there were other kind of interactive elements. So that in itself, I think, was meant to be something that people could actually engage with. It wasn't merely to be looked at, you could say, although looking is helpful, you can learn a lot from looking, but it was also meant to be kind of interacted with. So that was one of the elements of Convergences.
Well, and also remember, people could leave their comments on those postcards and write them out on the table. So that was another element. Just like with the Flux Kit, as we were talking about in the last episode, each of these installations in the gallery was meant to be interactive in some way. And so people could listen to the audio recordings, which had at that time, I think, Curtis telling two stories and Clarence Whitstone telling a story and Diana Steinhauer telling a story.
Janice, do you want to say something about the zine? Because I know that the zine really was largely the work of you and Sheena and came very much out of conversations that had been had over time.
Yeah, the zine came out of the workshop that we had in Banff, where we started to reflect on and think about what speculative energy futures was. And thank you for reminding me of that, Sheena, because I remember when you were talking about it and asking us to speculate in the future. And my first response was, but we don't speculate because we know what's going to happen. The prophecies tell us what is going to happen. And I think that's where I really wanted to integrate the idea of prophecy into the work and for you all to experience what it's like to hear a prophecy, what it's like to reflect on it, what it's like to live in the moment, but also prepare for the future, knowing you know what is coming. Because like I said, we have these ceremonies that are literally time travel and allow us to see into the future. And that's what my ancestors did when they entered into treaty over 140 years ago. The reason why they put certain things into the treaty, like a medicine chest or a schoolhouse and all of these other things, was because they knew that things were going to change in the future. And to think about the future generations, we would need these specific items. So when I was reflecting on climate change and the crisis that we're currently in, I was thinking about the times that Curtis and his parents were sharing these stories of prophecy and how in those moments it caused me to stop and reflect on what am I doing to change how I live as my own way of just transition. And what can I do to share these teachings in a way that's more fulsome for others to experience? So when we were talking about the workshop and what we wanted to go into the zine, it was kind of like doing our own time travel of how did we get here to this climate crisis place, and using words and phrases and kind of word poetry, narration through words to express that. So I really valued and appreciated that whole exercise and experience that we did in writing the zine. What I think resonated with me for that workshop in Banff
of the
study and having to do the interdisciplinary work was I had so much more appreciation and respect for artists and people who do that work, because you can just look at something and see it, but there's so much work that goes behind putting that piece together to provoke a certain emotion, feeling, and for people to sit with it. And that's where I really appreciated like Patrick and Ruth coming into this project, because it caused me to think about law in a different way. Like, how do we get people to think about law and policy in a different way that evokes urgency? Like, we need to do something right now because we're in a climate crisis. And so I think incorporating visual, text, auditory, using all the senses to engage with people was so impactful. And that's why I just love doing the work that we did on this project with the team that we had working together.
Yeah, I think we all really did. I'm going to turn it to Ruth. I just wanted to add one little thing. You were referring to time, and I was thinking that on the big banner, one of the questions that's there, which was, I think, from you, Janice, was, has Western science finally caught up to Indigenous knowledges? And that really has resonated with me so much. So, Ruth, do you want to pick it up?
Yes, just to say how inspirational I found the word poetry and the teachings embedded in the zine that was produced in Banff. And I wanted to also say that as we embarked on this exhibition, one of the things that we thought about was visiting Onion Lake, the community on the Saskatchewan-Alberta border, and to become more familiar with a place, the land that Curtis and Janice were so familiar with and draw their teachings from, and that we should go there and somehow be immersed in that space and meet the youth and meet the elders and see the landscape, I started to think about the lack of visibility that was really indicative, I think, of the, in a way, of the lack of attention that could be placed on this really vibrant landscape. And I did make three panels that were installed in front of the windows in our exhibition space. They were translucent and semi-transparent panels. Each of the three panels had three images. The images included snow-covered fields, an oil storage tank, a school classroom with a big sign urging everybody to speak Cree only, an image of a protest of elders in Ottawa in front of a fire, protesting the lack of just treatment for the community, and so on. And it was very important to me that it was a transparent photographs or images. And also on those images were words that I consulted with Curtis about what they should be and how they could be translated, and also some words from the zine. And those were superimposed on the images. And it was important to me that this appeared in front of the window, because through the window, you could see the brick, very authoritative buildings of the University of Alberta. You know, multi-story buildings looking very stable and important. And in front of this was the precariousness of these images that depicted the community of Onion Lake. And I wanted these to be converged or merged as well, so that the viewer would kind of see Onion Lake, but they would also see this merged with and how that contrast could be felt. As an artist, I'm totally committed to the power of art in mobilizing change. As Patrick says, art can be emotionally moving. Its sensory quality can impact people in important ways. And I think to mobilize change, to create other inroads into how issues can be rethought and reimagined for possible futures. So I think both Patrick and I were very keen to be part of that group that could help bring that physical manifestation of some of the ideas into play.
Thanks, Ruth. That's really, really helpful and gives a real kind of rich sense of the work. Before we go on and talk a bit about Bundle, I was thinking, Janice, I don't know if you wanted to maybe say anything about Onion Lake. I know the reason that we got there is because you were working there at the time and sort of helped us, kind of understand that there might be some valuable work that we could either do or we could help support.
Yeah, I think after we had the workshop in Banff, I sort of had this epiphany and realization that we were doing intergenerational knowledge, learning, and transfer amongst ourselves, but there's a gap in how that happens on reserve. And I felt like the most vulnerable communities and peoples that will experience the brunt of climate change probably the worst are not having these conversations. And it compelled me to want to bring that energy, the workshop, the conversation to the young people, and to allow them to have that intergenerational transfer of learning and knowledge. Because I think that most young people who go to school, who live on reserve, never have the opportunity sometimes to have these forward-thinking conversations, learning opportunities, and moments of reflection to think about their life and how do I envision myself in the future. And I think that's basically out of sheer survival, because everybody that lives on reserve, myself, you know, having grown up there, everything is in reactionary mode to what is happening at the federal provincial government levels and what laws and policies are being passed without us that are about us, and we're consistently reacting to that. So as a point of forward thinkingness, I wanted to bring this conversation to them and to allow that intergenerational transfer of learning to happen for them. And also being mindful that Onion Lake is, I would say, a progressive nation community that is not scared to challenge governments. If laws are introduced without input, consultation, or consent from Indigenous nations, and to just highlight the strength of the people who have to consistently challenge governments when things go wrong or when things happen that impact them, where they're left out of the conversation. And because our project is around climate change and climate justice, I wanted folks to have an opportunity to visit a community and to see what that was like and to have that experience. So I think that's why it was important for me to bring a microcosm of what we experienced as a team to the community for the young people to have that same or similar experience with all of us and have that art creation. Because to me, that was so powerful to go through that piece of working with the two of you, Patrick, Ruth, and Sheena, to reflect on ideas in a different way and to use art creation, knowledge mobilization, to bring forward ideas that provoke and evoke change. And so I wanted young people to have that opportunity. And so that's why.
And maybe we'll speak.
Bring that to Onion Lake.
Thank you, Janice, in that I remember the experience of being there as very powerful. And I was really more kind of a witness of the process of the young people interacting with the elders in Cree mostly. And at the same time, you know, felt given the opportunity to work with the young people on doing some creative work that was both directly and indirectly in response to their experience. And I will say that it felt very weighty in a good way, like that it was meaningful for the students or for the young folks. And certainly I felt very welcomed by the elders who we met.
The students made beautiful work. We had them learning how to use audio recorders so that they could talk to the elders, so that they were empowered through what I would call some of these feminist filmmaking techniques or like recording techniques, so that they could learn their stories and learn about their community and become holders of knowledge in their own spaces and families and places. And, you know, we just handed them our iPhones in some cases because we didn't have enough tools, and they did amazing things. You led found art stuff, like, you know, you did a fantastic job of all of that, Patrick. And we, you know, we did get to know the students, and we also got to know the elders, but most importantly, they got to know each other. It started out as, you know, an exercise in a workshop, and it was, you know, really, you know, Patrick lifting logs up onto a table and using them as tracing, you know, a tracing circle. And we had these big sheets of paper and we were laughing and having a good time. And then it became a small zine that fit in the pocket and that we handed out and people could take with them. But what it also represents is a conversation Janice and I have been having for a long time before Just Powers got started, I would say, because Janice and I would see these solidarities or affinities or synergies. We don't create ideas or research in a vacuum, but all of these ideas that we're sharing and generating and the new knowledges we've been able to develop because we're in meaningful long-term conversation, I think are really what is so enriching about being on a project like this.
Well, that's so beautifully said. I want to invite you back in, Ruth, but before I do, I'm going to say, so after convergences, there was COVID. And so I think that, you know, we've already talked about COVID a little bit in the introduction, you know, that what a obviously, it was formidable and remains so for the world. And for our project, it meant the need to adapt and change and think differently about what the sort of the other outcomes were going to be. So Ruth, you're welcome to pick up on any of what we've been talking about around Onion Lake, but also maybe you can then kind of move into talking a bit about how we move from convergences to bundle, because I know that's something you've thought about and articulated for another opportunity to speak about our project.
Bundle came about when Natalie and Sheena introduced us to what they call the Flex Kit. And that was built upon the idea, the Surrealists' idea of the Fluxus group in the early 1900s, who decided to create a kit that was a multimodal, that it was mainly kind of a suitcase, you might suggest, with all kinds of poetry, visual art, and other kinds of expressions in one kit that could be portable and could be multiple, not just a singular sort of rare piece of art. So in other words, the scale was very important. Other than filling the room in the gallery of the previous Convergences exhibition, now we were thinking of some kind of smaller object that could be inserted into the kit along with those of the other groups, and that could somehow hold some of the ideas that we developed in the Convergence project, and how we could translate that somehow, thinking about not so much walking through the space and experiencing it that way, but being interactive still, but having it as a much more intimate object that a viewer or a person holding this work that we would create in their hands and be able to assess it in a more intimate way. And so we understood that we could still use the zine as a really major driving idea of the prophecies and the work that Sheena and everybody did on that zine, and to include it because it was immediately something that could be held in the hands and was small scale and easily reproducible. And the bundle also was very much predicated on the stories that Curtis told. And he, in one of his stories, spoke about the teachings and that the teachings were given to him as a bundle, something that he carried forward in his life, in his experience. The robin was something that was included as a etching, I believe, that we included tobacco and cedar in the pockets, and that we had images of Curtis's dad and the many repeated in colors of the rainbow. We understood the rainbow to have deep significance through the stories that Curtis spoke about, and the colors of the rainbow tying the bundle together. So everything was very carefully considered. And one of the highlights of it was when Janice spoke about how she felt that this was an important bundle that could be a teaching tool, and that she would think about giving it to her son or sharing it with her son, and that would be very valuable. And I thought, well, maybe we're doing something right here. So, I see a very clear link between Convergence and bundle and an ongoing engagement between all of us and our interest in teachings and learnings and transformation towards, a more just society.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Ruth. There's so many connections you're making there. It's really beautiful. And I wanted to say a couple of things about connections and then turn it to you, Janice. One of the connections for me is that when I was working on the big curtain, I asked my wife, Barb, who is a better sewer than me, to do some of the sewing. And a former student of mine, an embroidery artist from India, Sharmistha, also did some of the work on that. And then when we came to bundles with Barb, I made a kind of prototype based on what we were talking about, but it worked okay, but it got really good when we gave it to Janice's mother, who made the beautiful 30 bundles for our project. So Janice, do you want to, I know it was really important to all of us when you said that you wanted to use the bundle with your son. So maybe you could just pick up on some of this.
Sure. So when I was thinking of the Flex kit and how that whole conversation transpired and the back and forth, initially, I was thinking about one of those survival kits that, you know, emergency preppers or those types of people that prepare for any type of apocalyptic crisis. I was thinking of that. And when we actually have these conversations with and among family and friends that know these teachings, people are probably wondering right now, what is the significance of the robin? My mom told me today, actually it was my dad, that the robins are back. So I'm very happy that the robins came back. So the significance of the robins to the listeners are that it's in one of the prophecies where it's sort of like time warning place of when things will get worse. So when the robins don't come back, it signifies that we're in another phase of climate energy world changes, and we have to prepare for these things that the elders refer to as hard times. And so connecting this back to the bundle, there's a physical preparation that we do, but there's also a spiritual preparation. And in a lot of these conversations on climate change, climate crisis, there's a human physical conversation happening, but most of the time the spiritual part is left out of this. And in our teachings, the spiritual part is 50% part of what the conversation is about, and doing those necessary ceremonies and protocols with the land to ensure that we're giving respect to the life of the creation and the land, that everything sustains us. So when I was thinking about the Flex kit, I was thinking literally about the bundle in the sense of in every Indigenous family, we would have a bundle, and that's where we keep our sacred items like pipes, we keep our medicines, we keep the teachings, we keep the knowledge, we keep the songs all in this bundle. And it gets shared with immediate family and those wanting to learn about that, those teachings and that way of life. And it also gets transmitted intergenerationally. So when I was thinking about the bundle, I was thinking, what would I want my son to learn in terms of what's critically important right now that's happening in the world in relation to climate change and how we can change our behavior so that he has a future that he doesn't have to think about all of the scarcity, all of these crazy climate changes that are happening. So in addition to the physical aspect of how we prepare for these changes, there's also a piece to this where that's practical in terms of the knowledge that people need to know and the spiritual part, because that's just as important. And so that's what bundles was for me. I was thinking about myself in terms of what would I want to know from a survivalist perspective, but also what would I want to transmit to my son that are very key, critical moments of information and knowledge that would signal to him what he would need to be aware of in terms of times of change and hard times. I also saw it as a moment of connection and learning with and among each other, because we weren't in our prophecies and teachings, we're not supposed to just hoard the information to ourselves. We're supposed to share this with our non-Indigenous relatives, brothers and sisters about how we are supposed to come together as a human family to share the information so that we can have better life together. So doing that was my contribution to exercising part of what that prophecy represents and stands for.
Wow. Thanks so much, Janice. Ruth?
I just wanted to say that one of the teachings of Janice was when I was tasked to fill one of the pockets in the bundle. And it became clear that it should be something that would be very significant. And we thought that maybe some sage or cedar that's used in ceremonies in the community, and of course, tobacco. And so I was charged with getting the tobacco, which was quite an adventure. I hadn't been in a tobacco shop in a long time. And then there was the question of cedar and or sage. And I live on the West Coast. And I said, well, I would love to contribute this sage, but I'm not sure where to get it or if it's the same as that you would find in, for example, Onion Lake. And Janice assured me that cedar would work. And I said, okay, no problem. I can get this cedar. Do I just like cut little branches off the tree or what? And Janice said, no, you have to, first of all, thank the tree and thank the creator. And I said, well, like, how do I do that, Janice? And she took me step by step through the process. And it was really so moving for me. It was very exciting. I happened to have a cedar tree in my front yard. And one morning when I knew it was time to send the cedar for the bundles, I approached my tree and I followed Janice's instructions. And it was the first time that I felt that I was, in a sense, praying to the tree and to the creator and thinking of it in a completely new way. This beautiful tree that I've passed by every morning and evening, every day as I come and go from home, and, you know, always thought of as a nice tree, but never had that relationship to it so explicitly. And ever since, you know, it has changed my attitude. So thank you, Janice, for that gift.
That's a great explanation of doing your homework, Ruth.
Well, it's the teaching of Janice and changing my attitude to the most normal things in my life that have become extraordinary as a result.
That's wonderful.
This is, you know, a very important project that has, I think, taught all of us in deep and meaningful ways from the ground up about what is really important when you're working on a climate justice project.
Yes, thanks very much, Janice and Ruth.
Thanks, Patrick.
Well, thank you, Patrick.
Oh, that was an amazing conversation among our colleagues and friends. Sheena, what are you thinking about our...
That's wonderful.
We all came to it with different disciplines and different worldviews and different knowledges. And, you know, we talked across these really like conceptual chasms, disciplinary chasms, generational chasms, linguistic chasms. And, you know, and we thought a lot about how they might converge. And in doing that work, we formed solidarities and we formed really solid relationships. I mean, we have friendships for life. And, you know, I think these are the kinds of relationships, the deep, meaningful relationships and knowledge building that do transform the world and will transform the way we approach climate justice moving forward. So we hope you have fun exploring.
Oh, that's so well said, Sheena. I think we'll leave it at that and look forward to our next episode. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the sixth series of the Just Powers podcast, Reflector, on the topic of speculative energy futures, which uses research creation as an interdisciplinary method for approaching climate justice and energy transition. Be sure to visit the Just Powers website at justpowers.ca, where you can learn more about speculative energy futures and explore the Flux Kit. You will also find information about our ongoing projects and access to more resources. This podcast is made possible by support from Future Energy Systems Canada, the First Research Excellence Fund, the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada, the Cool Institute of Advanced Study, the University of Alberta, Alberta Eco Trust, and the City of Edmonton. Special thanks to our guest host, Patrick Mann. This series was co-produced by myself, Sheena Wilson, Patrick Mann, Katie Lewandowski, and Sarah Taylor. Post-production was provided by Story Darling Studios in Edmonton, Alberta. This episode was edited by Sarah Taylor, CCE, and Blair Drover, mixed and mastered by Tony Bao, and music from Artlist.